Well, I was asked to say something about the practice of dana, or generosity, this afternoon. In fact, to say something inspirational about it. So let's see if something is inspiring. I actually find the practice of dana to be quite inspirational naturally. It inspires a sense of connection and letting go and brings forth joy, not only in the act of giving, but also in the thought to give and in the reflection of having given. It's one of the very beautiful foundational practices that we find in the Buddhist tradition. That is, you know, it's funny when we say foundational practices, some people think, oh, that means it's basic for beginners. But foundation is really the support upon which the entire rest of the practice develops. Generosity is a virtue, and we know that. We know it's a good thing. We know people who are generous, and we know how delightful it is to experience their generosity. And we also know how good it feels when we actually have done something generous that we have wanted to do. So it brings a kind of deep happiness. I think of generosity as being a practice that reveals the natural interconnectedness of all life. And I want to share a quote with you from the Ittibhutaka from the Buddha. Monks. So this is directed to the monks. Brahmins and householders are very helpful to you. They provide you with the requisites of robes, alms, food, lodging, and medicines in time of sickness. And you monks are very helpful to Brahmins and householders, as you teach them the Dhamma that is good in the beginning, the middle, and the end, with the correct meaning and wording, and you could proclaim the spiritual life in its fulfillment and complete purity. Thus, monks, this spiritual life is lived with mutual support for the purpose of crossing the flood and making a complete end of suffering. I think this last line really encapsulates the point here. Thus, this spiritual life is lived with mutual support for the purpose of crossing the flood and making a complete end of suffering. You may be familiar with the story of a realm of beings who live in this realm, and they have, they're hungry, and they eat at these banquet tables. Imagine these large, large banquet tables that are just filled with wonderful food. I mean, a tremendous abundance is present all around them. But they have one problem. They have to eat with these forks that are a meter long. And so they can't get the food from their plate into their own mouth because of the fork. So what they figured out is that what they can do is they can scoop up the food on the fork and they can feed the person across from them. And so I like to think of this story of these beings because in many ways we also live with long forks. If we are only concerned with me and my concerns and getting all the stuff for ourselves and hoarding and holding and keeping, then of course we're really not nurturing ourselves. We're really not feeding ourselves. But somehow it is that when we give and when we nurture others and when we support others and when we share with others, we find that they also share back. And there's a kind of mutual support that allows us to, our needs to be met, and for us to experience the real depths of life and the depths of connection and of peace. So I like to think of these beings that live with long forks and understand that every day we also have the opportunity to realize that we also live with long forks. And are we going to take the opportunity to share in that way? We sometimes talk about the interconnectedness of life because we know that we're all very mutually dependent. But I think this act of generosity, of giving, is an act where we recognize through our physical action that interdependence and that support. We make a statement of our connectivity. In the discourse that I read, that little verse from the Itivutaka, the Buddha was encouraging the monks to recognize the extraordinary gift that the lay people give to them to sustain them and to support them, to provide their food and their shelter and their clothing. Now, they may have very simple food and they may have very simple clothing and they may just have their little bowl. And it may all seem very, very simple, but you know, when I've been around monastics, I really feel a deep recognition of the respect and the honor of the gift that is given each and every day for them to eat. I know when I lived in the monasteries in Thailand, it was an extraordinary thing to both offer the food each day and to receive it each day. Now, as a Dhamma teacher, it is an extraordinary thing to live on the generosity, to live on the dana that is received, that is given on retreats like this and courses that I teach. It's something that I don't take for granted. It is so precious, and it's a gift that really comes from the spirit and the heart. A spirit that is not just an appreciation for some exchange that took place here, but is a gift of the Dhamma. It's a gift that tells me we want these teachings to continue. We want them to exist in our generation. We want them to exist in future generations. And we want them in a form that also can sustain a lay person. So when I receive Dhamma, I feel like it's held with a lot of meaning. That is like this mutual support, but it's really a profound gift. It also asks of me to reflect on the responsibility of sharing the Dhamma and of giving that as fully and as freely and as completely, as unselfishly as possible. When we give, whatever it is we're giving, whether we're giving financial support, whether we're giving a half of a cookie to a friend because we have one and we cut it and break it in half and we give a half cookie, or if we're giving some seed to the birds, or if we're giving time to a friend, or if we're giving our labor on a retreat like this, we've had an extraordinary staff who have all given their time to cook for us and to manage for us and to take care of the material needs so that we could just be quiet, you know, so that we could have the luxury of just coming in and meditating and not having to worry about things. So there's many, many ways of giving in terms of time and energy, in terms of material support. But in each act of giving, we are practicing something that is deep in the Dhamma. We are practicing letting go. And every act of letting go, every act of relinquishment is a very deep experience of joy and of happiness. We know the contraction of holding and clinging and how much suffering that entails. And yet in our world, we're often told, hold on, hold on, hold on, then you'll be happy. And you've all tried it. You know, how much happiness comes from contraction and clinging? Not a lot. But a great deal of happiness comes from release, from letting go, and from relinquishment. And we learn that in our practice. We learn it in our meditation. We know when we let go of mind states. We know when we let go of clinging. And we can experience that also when we give, because we're sharing and we are letting go of the fear that thinks, oh, but I might want this later for me, or I might not have enough later. And we let that go and we experience instead a deep connection with each other. There are three kinds of giving that are talked about in the tradition. The first, there's a little, I don't know if this translates into your cuisine, but I'll give it to you in American cuisine. This little statement, it says, being generous is giving away half your sandwich when it is peanut butter and jelly, but not when it's liverwurst. You know, again, okay. So, we like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Kids love peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, but kids hate liverwurst sandwiches. It's chopped liver. And, you know, the chopped liver stuff, you know, you spread on it. And some parents think it's healthy, and they make their kids eat it, and nobody wants it. They want to throw it away. So being generous is giving away your peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but not your liverwurst sandwich. So it's giving something not because we don't want it anyway, and we're going to just throw it away, and so we say, oh, you take this.
Giving away a tahini sandwich.
Oh, instead of the peanut butter and jelly. Yes, giving away a tahini sandwich instead of a...
Hummus.
No, hummus is pretty good, yeah. Too. I don't even know what that is. I don't want to know. Okay. You might experience this sometimes if you kind of clean out your closet and you found some kind of something that you really never wanted, that's why it got in your closet. Now you have to do something with it, so you might as well give it away. But maybe you don't wrap it up into a gift and then you give it on oh, this is for you. I got it special. It's helpful to give things that we have, even if it's not something that we particularly want. Sometimes we do receive gifts and we pass them on because we're not going to make use of them and we find somebody who would make a better home for that gift. But this is called tentative giving. If we give something kind of reluctantly because we think maybe we'll want it later, or if we give something that we don't really want, you know, it's just there's an edge to it that doesn't really feel like that full connection. You may have had this situation sometime where you maybe had some outfit that you thought, oh, it's time to give this away, time to just, you know, pass this on and give this away. But you think, maybe it'll come back in style, or maybe I'll want it some other time. And then there's just this holding on and holding on, even though you don't wear it for 5 years or 10 years, but you just can't quite part with it. When you finally do part with it, it's giving, but it's the minor kind of giving. It's just minimal giving. The next level or improvement on the giving is friendly giving. And it's sharing what we have and what we value with others. And there can be joy in this kind of sharing. It has an openness to it. But there is also this tension, because it's the kind of giving that when we give, we expect something back still. We might expect some kind of an exchange, like there's an implicit bargain in that. It's the kind of giving where we take a friend out to lunch, but we certainly expect that friend to take us out the next time. Or we We give some help at work, but we expect a reciprocity in it. So there's a lot of professional networking operates on this kind of giving. There's generosity and help, but it's you scratch my back, I scratch yours kind of a feeling. And so this giving that depends upon an exchange sometimes involves an assessment of what we have given in comparison to what we have received. So it's not really the most powerful form of generosity. It's still good. It's still giving. It still involves a letting go, and it still involves a connection, and it is a wise material sharing of things. But it's not the complete purity of giving that is possible as we cultivate and practice the act of generosity. The highest form of giving, which is taught by the Buddha, is giving the best that we have and delighting that we have it to give. Very different than hoarding the best that we have and only giving the lesser. When we practice this high form of giving, we don't wait for this total inspiration before we ever give. No, we train ourselves to give in all the different ways, in all the different opportunities, and in all the different kind of classes of giving, so that we strengthen our capacity to give and we purify this act of dana. Practicing dana expands the heart. It allows us to cherish our own capacity to be free, to be free to share, to be free to give, to be free to connect. This heart that gives is a very stable heart. It's a very stable mind. I remember talking to one monk who was asked, he was asked by another teacher about teaching emptiness and not self, and that her class, meditation class, sometimes students would be frightened of the teachings on not self. It would be a kind of a scary thing to let go of the self, and how to approach these rather profound teachings so that people could understand. Not self. And he said, teach them dana. Teach them generosity. And this surprised the audience because we were expecting some, more esoteric teachings, I suppose. I mean, emptiness on not self, it wasn't the answer that we were expecting. And so he went on to explain that these teachings of dana create the ability in the heart and mind to experience joy in wholesome states and to experience a mind that is free from a lot of those constructions, those places where we hold on. It creates the conditions which allow us to have the deep insights into emptiness. And I've appreciated that answer very much because when there is a kind of contraction in the heart or a kind of holding back or a kind of fear, even if it's as subtle as that uncertainty around some of these deep teachings, I realize that the practice is very often this very simple practice, this foundational practice of just giving and sharing and purifying the mind through these simple acts of love and connection. That monk was Bhikkhu Bodhi, who gave that response, who is the primary translator for many of the discourses that we have in the through the Middle Eight discourses and some of the lovely translations that we have now. So he's somebody whose view of Dhamma I don't disregard. I think I've used up my time. Sandhya and the managers also will say a few more words about dana to fill out the other aspects. I would just encourage you, as you practice dana, in whatever way you decide to practice it, to please enjoy the practice of dana. It's an extraordinary practice, and it is one that merits our full attention and our complete delight. Thank you.
I'll try to speak without the mic, so can you hear me in the back? Yeah? Okay. First, I want to explain with a few words for some people who are new, to give a context. This retreat has no price tag on it, and at this time of the retreat, we are having the opportunity or giving the opportunity to contribute for the cost of the retreat, and also contribution for the teaching. So this is like the context of what we're talking about right now, and later on, Karen will explain the details. But later on, you'll be doing the actual dana or contribution practice in the dining hall. I will use the mindfulness. So, what I wanted to tell you a little story I heard recently. I read recently a story about the Buddha, who some of you may know. He lost his mother when he was born. She died when he was 7 days old. And after his enlightenment, he decided to visit her. He had these powers after his enlightenment, and he could go visit her where she was, in heaven. Or actually, it said in women's heaven. Heaven for women. Because they want to keep things.
Place without men.
So he wanted to give her a gift. Of course, you don't see your mother for almost 30 years. He wanted to bring her a gift. And we can reflect for a moment. What could be a gift for someone you're so... So is so precious to you, and you want to bring them the best gift you can bring. And so, what you might think could be a gift you would give to someone you really really care about, or something really really significant. Or what would you like someone else to give you? Something that would be like the best present you can get, the most precious and significant gift you can get. So the Buddha taught her the Dharma. That was his gift to his mother. And I find this story very inspiring because, well, for one, it shows us that the Buddha thought of the Dharma as of the best. In fact, he says it meforashot. He says that the Dharma is the gift of Dharma exceeds all other, is the best gift of all other gifts. And also I find this inspiring because in my own life I find that it is so also for me. I also feel that the Dharma is the best gift that I've been given. And so I feel very grateful for Shaila for bringing us her gift of Dharma and bringing us to Israel the depth of her practice and her years and years of practice and silence and wisdom and compassion and her unique deliverance of the Dharma. And I think many of us here in the hall have sat with many, many other teachers, and yet we make a point to come every year, every 2 years, and Shaila comes to Israel to sit with her because of our very special way of bringing the very depth and knowledge of the Dharma, at the same time making it very accessible, very easy, very approachable. So, if you felt that during this retreat that you've been touched by the teachings, by the practice, and that you want to contribute for this, for the Dharma to be in Israel, and you want to contribute for such Dharma events to happen, and you want to support that the Dharma continues to be in Israel, and that Tovana continues to offer such Dharma events and other programs, then your contribution will be very, very appreciated. And sometimes at different times of our lives we feel, maybe some of us feel we don't have so much, or we're not in the best economical situation. And other times, maybe some of us feel that actually at this time of in life we are feeling quite blessed, and we kind of feel abandoned in our lives. And so maybe you can consider if you perhaps want to also donate for maybe for the person sitting next to you, who knows what their financial situation, or your roommate. And sometimes it's nice to know that we are contributing and donating, you know, more than just our share, and we are covering perhaps the cost of someone else's course. And it's, as Shaila said, it's very nice practice, because it's really all this, it kind of loosens the boundaries between giving and receiving. You know, it's like the Buddha, sometimes when some monks or people had some found it challenging, the whole issue of generosity, he would offer this practice of sitting with a small object like a stone in one hand, and then moving it between the hands, you know, just moving it from left to right. And when we practice this, you know, we start to kind of see if the left gives to the right and the right gives to the left, and like that, it's like who's giving and who's receiving. And it becomes obvious that there's this circle of giving and receiving that we are all part of. So I hope you, in your giving, you'd give in this spirit of creating a circle of giving and receiving. So thank you for your generosity.
צהריים טובים. רציתי להוסיף עוד כמה מילים קצרות לגבי דנה, בהמשך למה ששיילה אמרה ונוגע איך בעצם איך נבנה בעצם, נבנתה בעצם המערכת יחסים בין המתרגלים שבעלי בית לבין מתרגלים שבחרו בדרך הנזירית. בעצם מההתחלה הבודה יצר איזשהו תלות הדדית או יחסי גומלין בין אלה שבחרו להשקיע את, בעצם את מרבית זמנם, אם לא את כל זמנם, בתרגול הרוחני, לבין אלה שבחרו לחיות חיי בעלי בית, שזה בעצם אנחנו, ומנסים כמה שיותר להכניס את זה לתוך החיים ולהגיע לריטריטים כאלה שבהם אנחנו מתרגלים עוד יותר באינטנסיביות. אחד הכללים שהוא בעצם יצר מההתחלה לקהילה הנזירית זה שאסור להם לגדל שום דבר ואסור להם להכין לעצמם אוכל. אם מישהו היה פעם במנזר תרוואדי, אז יכולתם לראות שמי שמבשל זה בעלי בית שמגיעים למנזר ובעצם מבשלים. הכלל הזה בעצם יצר מההתחלה את התלות ההדדית הזאת של הקהילה הנזירית בבעלי הבית, שבעצם הקהילה הנזירית נתנה את המתנה, כמו שרקפת אמרה, מה שהבודה אמר, את המתנה הגדולה ביותר שמבחינתו של הבודה, שזה בעצם הדמה, וזה הטיצ'ינג. אז בעצם הנזירים נתנו בעצם את העושר הרוחני שיש להם אחרי שנים של תרגול, באמת השקעה טוטלית אך ורק בתרגול הרוחני, והקהילה של בעלי הבית בעצם תמכה בהם ואפשרה להם להמשיך ולעשות את זה. הבודה יכול היה לאפשר לנזירים לחיות ביער רחוק, לבשל לעצמם, להכין לעצמם, זה קרה אחר כך רגע במסורת הבודיסטית במקומות אחרים, אבל הוא רצה שיהיה איזשהו קשר, שלא יהיה איזשהו ניתוק. מה שאני מנסה להגיד לגבי מה שקורה אצלנו עכשיו, בעת המודרנית ובעולם המערבי, זה שלמרות שאין לנו בעצם הרבה מורים שהם נזירים, יש יחסית מעט נזירים מערביים ואין הרבה מנזרים במערב, זה עדיין קיים מבחינתי. כי המורים שלנו, אלה שבישראל וגם אלה שאנחנו מביאים מחוץ לארץ, הם בעצם אנשים שמשקיעים את מרבית זמנם בעצם בתרגול. והחליטו לקחת על עצמם לעשות את זה, כדי להעמיק בדרמה ולאפשר אותה לאנשים אחרים. ולמרות שהם לא נזירים לחלוטין ואין להם גלימה ורק הערה ותיק קטן ונטריה, ויש להם קצת יותר, יש להם טרולי ויש להם גם בית, אז זה אומר שהם צריכים הרבה פעמים צמיחה קצת יותר מרק ה-for requisite, מה ששאלה דיברה. הם צריכים גם לשאלה וגם לרקפת, יש בית ויש אוטו וצריך, הם חיים בעולם כמו שאנחנו חיים, ומבחינתי הנתינה שלנו בתור בעלי בית זה לתת להם כדי שהם יוכלו להמשיך ולעשות את זה, להמשיך גם לתרגל כמו שהם מתרגלים. ושאלה באמת היא אמרה ששמונה שנים של סיילנס והיא יוצאת לריטריטים, ואנחנו בעצם מקבלים את הפירות של העמקה ושל הוויזדום שהיא מפתחת באופן כמעט טוטל, אני חושבת, במשך יותר מ-20 שנה, כדי לאפשר לה ולרכבת לעשות את זה ולאפשר לנו את הדרמה, אנחנו יכולים לתת. וכאן מדובר על גם נתינה שקצת קשה לנו שאנחנו מדברים בריטריט על כסף, אבל אנחנו חיים בעולם שבו כל דבר עולה. וכשאתם חושבים על כמה אתם רוצים לתרום, תחשבו על זה שאיזה מתנה אתם קיבלתם וכמה אתם רוצים לתת, כדי שהמתנה הזאת לא רק תמשיך, לא רק שאתם תקבלו, אלא עוד הרבה מאוד אנשים שיגיעו לריטריטים. אז כאן אני רוצה טיפה גם לעבור ולדבר טיפה על תובנה, שתובנה היא קצת כמו המנזר המודרני באיזשהו מקום. זה כאילו הממסד שמחזיק, אין לנו פה מנזר קבע שבו יושב מישהו. בעצם תובנה היא מין איזה, גם תובנה זה מין איזה שם מרטילאי, יושבים פה אגב הרבה מאוד מתובנה במרכאות, כל מיני אנשים שדואגים לאירוח ומסדרים שיהיה פה את האולם ואת כל מה שאנחנו, הקריות שאנחנו יושבים והזילונות שניתלו, ודאגו להזמין את המורים ולדאוג לעוד המון 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 דברים. ובלי תובנה בעצם, בתור איזה מין שם גדול לממסד שתומך בעצם בהעברה של הדרמה, אז לא היינו יכולים להזמין את צ'יילה, ולא יכול להיות להיות לנו אינדור, ולא היינו יכולים לאפשר למורים שלנו, גם הישראלים, להמשיך וללמד גם בפעילויות הרבות שיש, שהם לאו דווקא בריטריט. אז ובעצם יש לנו פה את האפשרות לתרום באופן ישיר לאנשים שממש מהפה שלהם אנחנו שומעים את הדרמה, ובעצם לכל האנשים שתומכים בפה הזה שמעביר לנו בעצם את דברי החוכמה ואת המתנה. באמת אין מתנה מבחינתי, את המתנה הכי גדולה שאפשר לקבל.